Next up, it's a very great pleasure to introduce to you Heather Champ. Really want to thank Intergen for this as well, their support in bringing Heather to us today. Please go and say hi to the guys at the Intergen stand as well. They're very nice, friendly people. They always get behind Webstock. They've been key supporters right from the very first one we ran. And they always put so much effort into their stand, and they're really cool. So go say hi to them. And thank you very much, guys, for supporting us yet again. Now, Heather Champ is the Director of Community at Flickr. She is also the founder of the Mirror Project. She's the co-creator of JPEG magazine. She's a self-confessed camera junkie, and we've been trying to get her to come here since 2006. Finally, she's here. We're really happy to see her, so please give her a warm welcome.
I'm just going to reset the clock here. Sorry. Oops. Good afternoon. My name is Heather Champ. I'm the director of community at Flickr, and I'm really pleased to be here. As Ben mentioned, we've been trying to come for the last 2 years. The first year, actually, was in the process of getting my green card, and I wasn't allowed to leave the U.S. for a few years. So I finally got that worked out, and then last year was all manner of disaster. I'm really pleased to be here. You have a really lovely city. So I just want to start out. San Francisco is one of those places where it's very thoughtful, and I took a couple years ago when I went to see the Nutcracker with some friends. If you've ever been to the Nutcracker, you know that a cannon is key to the whole sort of war between the Nutcracker and the mice that kind of leads the whole acid dream off. It's a mental reminder for me to apologize to you because I'm going to swear. It's not gratuitous. It's actually sort of within the context of what I'm talking about. I didn't initially do this, and sometimes I was up in a small town north of Toronto, and I felt really bad when I didn't warn them ahead of time that I was going to kind of let loose. So I do apologize. Flickr is an online photo sharing community that launched actually, that picture on the top left is February 10th in 2004 when it launched at eTech. So we've just had our fifth birthday. The site was started by a small group of people who had actually started Game Number Ending. It was Ludicorp, based out of Vancouver. In 2005, it was acquired by Yahoo, and the team moved down from from Vancouver to Sunnyvale, and that's when I joined the team as a community manager. The bottom left-hand image will give you an idea of what daily life is like. There, some people are working, and other people are beating each up with large inflatable objects. And the image at the bottom right is about half the team last year, just after our video launch. Just an idea of kind of give you an idea where we're kind of looking at. We have 3 billion page views a month. We have 3.2 billion photos and videos, 52 million monthly visitors, and we have 30 million members. What that boils down to is about 5,000 new pieces of content, either photos or video, uploaded every minute. We kind of like to think of ourselves as the eyes of the world. This is a screenshot that I took this morning of the world map, and you'll see that Webstock is representing as one of the bigger tags. And there's Mr. Bird, who I think isn't sadly with us. He has been sent off to his grandparents. But you get a sense of kind of all of the variety of things that are going on around the world. If you hit this a few times, it'll reload and show you a variety of things that people are uploading and sharing around sort of globally. I think what I love most about Flickr is kind of the breadth of stories that people are sharing. For me, it's become a place where I really start to see what's going on in the world, sort of large global stories first. The two images on the left-hand side are from Phuket in the aftermath of the tsunami back in 2004. It was really kind of stunning. The top image was just the aftermath, and then one of our members went back afterwards a few months later and interviewed the gentleman bottom left about his experience in rebuilding. The two images on the right are from the London bombings in 2005 in London. The two pictures were taken by Alexander Chadwick, who happened to be on one of the tubes underground. And these are photos that he took with his mobile phone as he was being evacuated and coming out. I think they're really stunning sort of in this, sort of the reality of what that experience might have been like. So we've got these really big events that are going on. But what's, I think, more charming to me is that they're framed in relationship with really small personal stories. The image top left is Hope Costello, the birth of Hope Costello. Eric Costello was one of the original founders. And this was the birth of his fourth child. We sort of have a rule at work, pictures or it didn't happen. And when we know that somebody's about to give birth, we're anxiously hitting reload on the pictures, their photo streams to see what's going on. Another image at the bottom left is from somebody else in the community sharing their photograph. So we have these, you know, beginning moments. We see a lot of accounts created when people have sort of these life-changing events, be it births or weddings or graduations. But there's also the, sort of the other side of that is people passing. The image top right was Simon Loeffler, who shared this photograph of his grandfather, and it was right after he passed away, and he had this remarkable story. His grandfather really was kind of the patriarch of their family, and sort of the stories around his life, and I just thought it was such a touching portrait. The image bottom right is a friend of mine's father who passed away from cancer, and when I contacted her to ask her if she would mind if I shared this in presentations, she sort of related a story how her family was a little concerned when they realized what Ali was doing, because for them this was a very private moment. He'd had a long battle with cancer. Ali for a long time was his primary caregiver. And for her, the Flickr community became a really a place where she could go for support, for people to kind of help her through this. And when she sat down and showed her family what was going on, I think they began to understand how this was really just an extension of that. So it's really, I think for me, you know, so important to kind of have this sense of what it is that we're looking at in terms of very personal storytelling. People, you know, who are taking the time to share these really intimate moments with us. And it's really remarkable the number of things that we've, you know, within the team have had an opportunity to see. So I wanted to share with you today seven things that we've learned in terms of managing a large, passionate community. These are all sort of things that we've gone through in trial by fire and kind of what we've learned about that. I think the number one is you have to respect your members. So this is a screenshot from 2006 when Yahoo Games was creating these it was called the Brand Universe. I don't even want to talk about that because it makes me quite nauseous. But they were sort of creating these sites, and this was to celebrate We. And what they were doing was they were pulling in all of the tags tagged with We from the Flickr community. This happened to coincide with something I'll talk about a little bit later. But what happened was when the community realized what was going on, things started to change, and I've highlighted the area here of the community's response to what was going on. For me, you know, seeing that somebody had taken the time to kind of respect Yahoo's brand and find the same font for sucks and kind of put it through there, I thought was that attention to detail is quite wonderful. We ended up having a series of heated conversations, people calling quite frantic to figure out what they could do to resolve this. And in the end, we kind of were able to educate them on using Creative Commons licensed photographs so that they could pull in content from our members who were interested in having their content shared in such a way. It was a little bit funny in that what happened after that people still continued to tag their photos, Yahoo sucks, with the Creative Commons license after that, even though the situation had been resolved. So it took a while to get sorted out. But I think it's really important. I think if anybody's been paying attention the last couple of days and what's been going on with Facebook, people are much more knowledgeable about looking at a terms of service and understanding what it is that what sort of obligations a company has in terms of how they can use people's members' content. The lawyers tend to kind of wrap it up in endless paragraphs, a lot of them in all caps. But I think when it comes down to, there's kind of an idea of what's legal and what's right. And what we're always striving for at Flickr, especially by having a variety of licensing models, is to encourage people to really license their photograph in a way that they want to, and then encourage the community who is developing upon our open API platforms to respect those rights. It's really, copyright is one of the most misunderstood issues online, and so it's something that it's an ongoing dialogue with people. We learned a lot through this, and you can believe that a lot of our fellow Yahoos learned a lot, and this is something that we continue to share with them as an ongoing basis. Secondly, what works really well is putting put more tools into the hands of your members. So we've got a number of different things that we do where we can enable our members to take immediate action. This is more around areas of moderation or abuse and advocacy, rather than relying on us to determine what is or isn't appropriate. We've got something. We have these flag this photo. Different things happen when different numbers and pieces of content are flagged that eventually bubble things up to a core team of people who can actually review. But what we've got is a tool called Block, where it enables individuals to immediately take action if they're uncomfortable with somebody's behavior around them. And when you block them, these are all the different things that don't happen any longer. Putting this kind of tool into the hand of your member means that they can do a lot of self-determination. Sort of an example that I use around this is we don't moderate against language. And that's been an interesting area of discussion. And sort of the example that I use is around the C word, which I'm not going to say because I come from North America and I'm uncomfortable saying that. But I have a lot of friends who are Brits, and that's kind of like a term of endearment. And that they use quite loosely. With having something like this, it gives me an opportunity, if I'm not comfortable with that happening on my photo stream or within my group, that I can sort of stop that happening. But others who may or may not want to sort of participate in that way can actually do that. And so I like these kinds of tools that kind of give you a little bit more permeable surface in terms of what your community guidelines are, especially if you have a lot of private areas. We don't really have many public areas on Flickr. We have a lot of private areas in terms of your photo stream is yours, a group that you start is yours, and so you can self-determine. As long as you're not going out of bounds for the overall terms of service or community guidelines, then you can really craft what you want to do in those areas. And lastly, report abuse is really important, just as an overall way. If somebody finally gets to the point where they really do feel uncomfortable, this goes to a high priority queue that's managed by the team 7 days a week, where we can kind of take a step back and look at the context of what's going on. So give your members tools, let them be the people who can really self-determine what isn't appropriate around their content. I think the key benefit of this is as you grow and scale, customer care costs and the number of people who have to do this can become a consideration. So if you're enabling your members to do it, then you have a little bit more wiggle room when it comes to how you're scaling some of your customer care issues. Something we learned the hard way. So don't wait. If you need to make a significant change to the way that your members experience your site or actively participate, what you should do is you should come up with a plan of action where you make an announcement of what that change is going to be. You give people 6 to 8 weeks to determine if they want to continue on, and then you make the change. So where we learned this the hard way, so back in August of 2005, we had as of August 15th, anybody who was a member had to associate their account with a Yahoo ID to log in. So we had this, everybody from that point on was going with a Yahoo login ID, but we then had this group that became known as the old school members who signed in with an email address. And at that point we said, you know, hey, you old school members, don't worry about it. At some point in the future, you're going to have to merge your account, but, you know, we don't know when that is and what's going on. 18 months later, we needed to make that change because we had our international launch coming up. And so we had this post at the beginning of February letting people know that in 6 to 8 weeks we're going to be making the change. Pretty much all hell broke loose. And this is, if you ever see something like this in our forum where the actual topic turns into a mini FAQ, you know we're really down in the weeds, and the cacophony of feedback that's coming in is such that we feel that what we're, you know, the information that we're trying to impart is getting lost. So really, you know, really kind of be, you know, contain your change in such a way that, that you're not going to be biting your, you know, kicking yourself in the ass afterwards. The fourth thing that we've learned is that feedback for change has a definite life cycle. These are images or art that our members shared, giving us feedback what they thought about video. These are the polite ones. There were definitely ones that were a little bit more scarier. The one that I found really the scariest was, you know, those little drawing maquette dolls. There was somebody who had a gun pointing at the maquette doll, and I was kind of like, so we've got members who have guns. I'm not sure how I quite feel about that. But so these were kind of what some aspects of what the community was sharing. I guess it, what it came down to, you know, YouTube has cast such a long shadow over the internet in terms of what people think video is. And when we launched video last year, I think initially there was this incredible concern that, that we were going to go kind of the way of YouTube and become FLUB. And in the end, what we realized and what we've come to realize is that what you, the kind of feedback that you get in the first 48 hours of any launch is kind of people's sort of gut reaction to the change, like just that something has changed. And so it, it can be, you know, people are angry, people are confused, or, you know, sometimes we see a lot of people just, they actually haven't tried it, they haven't engaged with it, they just want to come out and tell you that they don't like it. Whereas over a 2 week period, then you start getting actual feedback in terms of, you know, bugs that you may have missed, real sort of much more thoughtful feedback of what's going on. So it's definitely, you know, I think sometimes there's a, especially from a marketing perspective, you have all these people who are very angry, who are saying very negative things to kind of jump in and really and sort of calm the waters. I think it's really important in some ways to actually let people have a valve for release to kind of blow off steam a little bit. So that's kind of an example of through video of really looking at how change, to take the feedback for change. Something else that we feel is really important is kind of owning your own failure. This is one of my favorite topics that favorite Flickr blog post that Stuart wrote a few years ago. When the team first moved down from Vancouver to Sunnyvale in 2005, Flickr was really limping along. The growth was really starting to outstrip the server architecture, and Mondays were our heaviest days, where people would get back from work, get back to work on Monday morning, and start uploading all their pictures. And so by the end of the Monday, the servers, everything would start falling apart, and would turn into this really inelegant cascade of failure with things breaking down, and it became really painful for us and for the greater community in sort of these, you know, just repeated horrible week after week sort of Monday disasters. And so Stuart wrote this just incredibly heartfelt post, sort of really owning up to the fact that we were really kind of not doing so well. And I look to this as something that's so key in the level of being really transparent as you can, and really being appreciative and aware that you really need to kind of own up and take control of that. Another lesson we learned is that the universe is, especially on the internet, is a very fickle lover, and things can go wrong when you least expect it. In the summer of 2006, John Allspaugh, who is our director of operations, came up to me and said, you know, Heather, we need to take the site down. And when we're doing maintenance updates at that point, what we would do is we would put a header across the top of the site and let people know, you know, at least 6 hours ahead of time that we were going to have to take the site down for a period of time. So I was like, John, that's great. So when is it going to start? And we'll go, you know, I'll go over and I'll talk to Cal and we'll get the header banner up. And he kind of looked slightly pained and he said, well, no, like now. And I was sort of disappointed and frustrated because typically what happens at that point, the site comes down and the Flickr is having a massage page would go up. Out of our frustration, what we decided to do, that we were going to replace our existing massage page with this picture of these two dots. And it was right after Senator Stevens in the U.S. had his kind of rant about the internet being like a series of tubes. And so we had this, our tubes are clogged. And what we wanted people to do, or what we encouraged people to do, was to print out this page. And when the site came back up online, print it out, do something with it, whatever they wanted to do. And when the site came back online, upload it and tag it with a Flickr coloring contest. And then we would give a year of pro to the one that we liked the best. And I think the site was down for 6 hours total. And then when the site came back up again, we ended up having over 2,500 bits and pieces of content uploaded. Personally, I'm a big fan of Stormtroopers. And so for me, Stormtroopers always win. I'm still thrilled, was it 2 or 3 years ago in the Rose Bowl parade when the Darth Vader was the Grand Marshal and there were a few battalions of Stormtroopers marching down in Hollywood. I thought that was like the best thing ever. But we had over 2,500 images uploaded. I feel bad that there were so many cats around the world that day who were forced through pieces of paper. So many small children put to the task of coloring pieces of paper. It was all manner of sort of imagination. Some people actually did color it and then scan that and put it online. The one that kind of was the most remarkable to us was the woman who cut out the circles and put her boobs through and then uploaded that up, and that was just kind of, I'm so sorry. Should have warned you. I'm sorry. For us, it was just really great. In the end, people were really kind of engaged with what was going on. We gave away 16 pro accounts in total, and everybody who entered was given 3 months of pro as well. A couple of the Wired News picked it up, and it turned into this little PR win for us. I hate thinking about it in that way. The marketing people were happy. And so for us, it was something where, you know, the universe is going to hand you lemons at times and just make lemonade. Do what you can to branch it through so that you can get to the other side and you know, not anger as many people. So lastly, I want to tell three stories so that, you know, you're on the internet. You think you're in control. You think you are the sort of the master at the helm of your own ship. We have been surprised at times by what the community has shared with us and kind of where things have gone. So in the summer of 2005, it was August, there was a woman who was riding the subway in New York City. And a gentleman riding on the train with her started masturbating. And she was very upset, and she captured the event with her camera phone. And when she got home, she uploaded the picture to Flickr. She went to Craigslist, New York, and she wrote a long post about, you know, hey ladies, has anything happened like this to you? And this was really my first experience sort of with the idea of party crashers in terms of, you know, you have this active community, people who really engage around what's going on in your community. They understand the community guidelines. They understand the terms of service. They sort of know what's expected of them. Well, what happened was it got picked up by the media. This is the New York Daily News. They interviewed her and sort of started sharing the story. And there was a community, an online community of men's rights people who showed up, who sort of all created accounts and started actively harassing people on the within her photo stream. You know, how dare this, you know, man be, you know, found guilty? You know, he didn't have an opportunity to kind of prove, you know, I mean, aren't we innocent until proven guilty? Quite frankly, if you zoomed in on the image, it was really clear that he was guilty, pink bits and all. But, you know, it was really something where you've got this group who were, you know, she had her regular Flickr community who were really kind of supporting her, and you had this other group of people who were coming in causing all of this rabble-rousing. You know, what we've really learned to do is pay attention when you have these events going on where, you know, your community sort of gets invaded by these party crashers. Another example is when Cindy Sheehan, who was the a mother whose son had died in Iraq, had gone and was camping out in front of Bush's ranch in Texas. She had a lot of supporters on Flickr who were kind of sharing her story, and there were a lot of sort of, I was going to say pro-war, but that sounds a bit weird. These people kind of coming on who were really angry that, you know, this sort of mother of a soldier was, you know, going up against the president of the country. They came on and they sort of started causing a lot of issues as well. So what we do now is we, you know, we really pay attention. And if something like this is going on, make sure that we have somebody who can keep an eye on how the community is engaging. And, you know, there is an opportunity in events like this that some people will become good members of your community. But typically what's going on is they're there for a very specific reason, and they're not really going to play by your rules. They have an agenda that they want to maybe overshare with people. And so, you know, we're fairly confident now in kind of looking at it and kicking out the people who are just there to really cause trouble. Back to this gentleman. In the end, he was identified as being a very famous New York raw foods chef. The outcome for... now, I have no idea, you know, just, I'm never going to a raw foods restaurant in New York. I don't know if what's going on with that, but for me, it was just a little disturbing. So there maybe there was a happy, I don't want to say even a happy ending to this. That's just a... He was caught. I have to stop doing this. It gets me in trouble. So this last year, this is, I love this. So this is a small open sharing space in Vancouver was broken into. And so this, we saw this, my business was broken into last week by two young moronic men. They took with them four laptops and our two iMacs. We have the crime on tape, but weren't able to capture high-res image. Amazingly, one of the thieves, or at least the new owner of our hot machine, was using photo booth and unknowingly uploaded a photo of himself to our Flickr stream. So, guess which one of these things is not like the other, or these things. So, somebody IM'd me and said, you know, take a look at this. And so I was able to do some research. I don't really talk to people in the community all that often. And so I found their telephone number and I called them and I said, you know, we've got the IP information on where those pictures were uploaded. If you want to put that into the case going on, then, you know, I'd be more than happy to share that information with you. I think, awesome. Come on, that's an awesome tattoo. So in the end, we were sharing that information with them. They had already filed a police report. It became a huge sort of this really got picked up this in Canada and sort of went across the country and was really sort of in all of the major centers in Canada. The theft happened in Vancouver, but there was a lawyer in Calgary who picked up the phone and called his existing client saying, we need to go down to the police station. And the guy was like, why? He goes, have you not looked at the newspaper lately? So the fact that he already has a lawyer is, you know, I'm sure not having a lawyer doesn't necessarily mean you've got, you know, issues. So they went down and the individuals got their laptops back, which I thought was kind of awesome. And this has happened a few times. There's an application that you can use on your mobile phone called Shozu that automatically uploads the picture. And we've seen a number of cases with, you know, people who've left or lost their mobile phones and taxis and things and like that, and then pictures start coming up a few days later of different things. And so I like to think, you know, that if you went back 5 years ago, that Katarina and Stuart thought that, you know, they would be helping people with their electronic equipment probably wasn't high on their mind. And one last story. A lot of what we do when we're planning new features is we spend a lot of time beforehand figuring out all the ways that people are going to mess with what we're doing. We call it kind of worst case scenario planning. And so we'll sit down and we'll really think long and hard about what is the potential so that we can build, you know, pre-build a few tools to take action. If we need to do things, you know, opting out and opting in for our different members, how they participate. And in 2006, when we were starting to look into geotagging and our members being able to add geolocation information, we sat down and really started thinking, like, well, what are all the ways that this can go wrong? And Sergey Murachov, who does all of our interestingness algorithm work, he and I sat down. And I don't know why this came up. Maybe it was like the hot summer down in Sunnyvale. But we became absolutely convinced that like that giant floating Texas-sized pile of garbage in the Pacific, that people were going to create these porn islands. So there'd be these secret places that if you went to a latitude, you know, a certain latitude and longitude, you'd find just huge piles of geotagged porn. I don't know. That just seemed like it was a pretty reasonable solution. What is the worst thing somebody can do? So we launched, and the next day, Sergey sort of came over, and he said, so how's it going? I'm like, it's great. He goes, have you found any, you know, porn islands? And I'm like, no, it doesn't seem to be an issue so far. He said, well, have you looked at Greenland? I'm like, no, what's going on? So we went and looked at Greenland. Isn't that awesome? Either Greenlanders are much angrier than and have been very thoughtful in how they've settled their country, or this individual took the time to place 82 individual photographs across the face of Greenland so that it would come up with the word fuck. And so as a result, we built a tool where geotagged images, the geolocation information would show for the individual, but not for everybody else. So I think it's really important that you know when you're looking at a map on Flickr that it's still there, but you can't see it. That the people in Greenland are really just unhappy still. But I'd be unhappy if there's that much snow, too. I fled Canada years ago and have really thrilled to live in San Francisco and not deal with that. Anyway, on that note, I want to thank you all. It's been a real pleasure to be here. Derek and I spent Monday doing a workshop session. It was really great to meet with a lot of you. I wish you all good luck with Section 92. I've been reading up on that. I think you all have a lot of work ahead of you on figuring out where you guys are going to go with copyright, and I think that's going to be pretty exciting. I wish you the best. Thank you.